Good evening. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found at blogtalkradio.com every day of the week. Starting Mondays, of course, at 6 p.m. Eastern, Vito Esposito's show featuring Vito and Big Al. Tuesdays, Vito or Al takes it in flux right now. Wednesdays, of course, me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports, 6 p.m. Eastern. Thursdays, I come with the Hankerings once in a while. I'm probably going to do one tomorrow. It'll be around 2 p.m. Eastern, mainly around some of the financial stuff going on. One, the bank deal that I'm still rankled about, and now the debt ceiling issue. See how that vote ends up going. Fridays. Right now, Conservative Casual Friday with Vito, Taking Back Our Republic, I think it's called. I keep forgetting what it's called. I'll look it up and get it right one of these times. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk, aided by the beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays at 3 p.m., Eric is in with a real interfaith dialogue, a.k.a. Cross and Crescent discussion. Like I said, 7 days a week, we're here. Other shows on Blog Talk Radio, Annie with Southern Sense Radio with her able co-host Curtis Bennett. And, of course, Tim Tapp with Tap Into Truth. Tim goes a couple nights a week, and I think Annie goes on Fridays as well as other days. Some of those are simulcast as well. Also, Joseph Gibson, Restoring Our Republic. That's Tuesdays, I believe, as his chief with Simple Things in Life. Holger pops up on occasion. You got to follow him when you see him so that you know when something's popping up. Brother Warren, if you're in the mood for, I don't want to say comedy, but he's quite the opposite side of the political spectrum from we here at Global Patriot Radio. But he does come up with some good stuff, and he's recently had a show about jazz. I think he's had a couple about him. He had one on John Coltrane that was really good. I am hanging out here in Bio Central. Yes, the bioluminescence is back, so I am paddling out at this coast, which makes me a Space Force observer on those days when I get a launch while I'm over there. That's always awesome. Little Aussie, my mini Aussie, was fed promptly at 5:02, diligently over at Acoustic Hankland. And we come to our first internet laughy today from the Babylon Bee. White House announces illegal immigration has decreased 90% since they redefined. Google the Babylon Bee. It's hilarious. Second one is also from the Bee. This is really good. guys will understand this. Man was about to turn off car, but Stairway to Heaven came on radio, so he's got to sit in his driveway for 7 minutes and 55 seconds. I'm raising my hand because that is exactly me. I'm telling you, I would do it. Even though I've got it on CD, and you can pull it up anytime you want now, but yeah, when it comes out, it's sort of like certain movies that come on, like when Red Dawn comes on, even if it's like on a station with commercials and stuff, I still watch it. I don't know why. I've only seen it like a million times. So there are ways to interact with our show. You can, of course, come in online, www.blogtalkradio.com. Look for Global Patriot Radio. You can also set up your account and come into the chat room. So when you log in and you look for the live button, you click on that and it'll tell you down in the lower right corner who is chatting, what groups are live. If you come in during the right time, ours will be. You can email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Head over to Facebook, Hank Jones Polysports, like I say. I'm mainly there to play my Candy Crush each day, talk with friends and stuff, but for the most part, I don't do much Hank stuff there. On Twitter, I'm pretty active, at HPolySports. A lot of good follows and followers on Twitter these days. Good place to be. I know people are bitching about Jack Dorsey, and they bitch about Elon Musk, depending on your, you know, but I mean, it's still, I'm not one of those, I don't really care who runs it. If I'm getting suppressed, whatever. You know, the right people are going to see it, and you'll know after a while. Pamela Hensley, who's an actress, she was on the Matt Houston show. She's mentioned that she seems like she thinks she's getting shadow banned because she said her interaction rate, and I don't track any of that stuff, but her interaction rate is way down. So, yeah, I think there are people, and even though Elon Musk is the owner, that doesn't mean that there aren't people within Twitter that are bad actors, just like in the FBI and places like that. Last week's obits that George Maharis, age 94, actor and singer. I think he was in Route 66, but singer. He did a version of Teach Me Tonight, so if nothing else, that gets mentioned. Denny Stoltz, age 89, former college football coach, including Michigan State. Cotton Tree, a 400-year-old kapok tree in Sierra Leone, was felled by heavy storms. No official count on the age yet, but I assume they'll count the rings. But roughly. Larson, 92, age 92, actor and magician. He was the creator of the Magic Castle, which is like a clubhouse for magicians and magic enthusiasts located in Hollywood. Maybe. I mean, do we know if it's really there, or Doug Henning would say, is it an illusion? The late Doug Henning. William O'Neill, 90 years old, American author and stockbroker. He was the founder of Investor's Business Daily, as well as the author of the book, How to Make Money in Stocks. Actor John Beasley. His grandson, by the way, is Malik Beasley, plays for the Lakers. Actor John Beasley passed away at age 79 yesterday. He was an assistant coach in the movie Rudy, and he played the father of The Rock's character, Chris Vaughn Sr., in the 2004 Walking Tall reboot. Again, that's another one. It's nothing compared to the original, but when it comes on, I watch it. Why? But I do. Retired British sprinter Mike McFarlane passed away earlier today at age 83. He won silver in the 1988 Olympics in Seoul as part of Great Britain's 4x100-meter relay team. He won a couple Commonwealth Games medals, both 200 and 100, as well as a 60-meter Euro champ, I believe, indoor champ 1 year. And don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's top and best 24-hour call center, messaging center, and answering service for your medical clinic, hospital clinic, information gathering services, service companies large and small. if you're one of those companies that never came back from COVID, I mean, you came back, but you never went back to your office, they're a prime outlet for you to let them front your calls, distribute them out as needed. They also work with remote staff. So guess what? If there's a hurricane in Central Florida, doesn't matter. They've got staff elsewhere that can handle it for you. You're in an area where you get snowstorms. Guess what? They're in Florida. They're always available during the winter. If you like working remotely, if you're looking for that type of job, absolutely, they'd love to work with you. Give them a call, 800-555-3738, or visit them on the web at alliancecommunications.com. Another internet laughy. All of them today, by the way, are from the Babylon Bee. This one's good. Biden appoints Kamala Harris to counteract rise of intelligence. Oh, that's a good one. Okay, evidently John Fetterman has figured out a way around the Senate dress code. I just saw that headline. I didn't really see what it is, but I'm sure if we ask him, this is probably what he would tell us. Yep, that explains it. Remember last week when I discussed that the Los Angeles Dodgers were hosting, as well as giving an award to, a group of irreverent LGBTQ comedians who mock the Catholic Church? I forgot what they're called, like the Sisters of Irrelevance or something like that, or Sisters of Irreverence. Now, it's part of their June 16th Pride Night. Well, it seems like not only have they pissed off a bunch of baseball fans, but also at least one of their players, Clayton Kershaw, pitcher. Here's Yahoo's version of the story, but I've seen some other stuff too, that some people tweeting stuff out. So basically, he pushed for them to announce their Christian night in response to this award. They moved up the announcement of their Christian Faith and Family Day because pitcher Clayton Kershaw was unhappy that the team chose to highlight the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, a prominent LGBTQ plus charity. The Dodgers had hosted Christian Faith and Family Day in previous seasons and were evidently going to host it this year, but Kershaw wanted the team to make the actual announcement sooner as a response to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence receiving an award. According to the Dodgers, they said, "I think we were always going to do Christian Faith Day this year, but I think the timing of the announcement was sped up." That's what Kershaw said. Picking a date and doing those different things was part of it all as well. Yes, it was in response to the highlighting of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence by the Dodgers. He tweeted the announcement about the team holding Christian Faith and Family Day, which will be July 30th. This comes, as I said, in response to the Dodgers hosting them at their Pride Night. They receive an award during the festivities in recognition of their community service. It says they have spent the past 44 years helping those on the edges of society. It says they played a pivotal role and caring for those afflicted with AIDS in 1979 and throughout the 1980s. And look, you know, if they're really doing work, then fine. But it doesn't mean that they've got to lampoon the Catholic Church. And as I've said before, I'm not Catholic, but I'm not a Catholic phobe either. Conservative politicians such as Florida Senator Marco Rubio took issue with this. They denounced Rubio and others denounced the Dodgers for the decision, accused the Sisters of making a mockery of Christians. They frequently dress in drag, typically wearing nun habits. Clay Kershaw viewed it as mocking and took exception. Per the Los Angeles Times, he says, "I don't agree with making fun of other people's religions," he said. "It has nothing to do with anything other than that. I just don't think that, no matter what religion you are, you should make fun of somebody else's religion. So that's something that I definitely don't agree with." Yeah, we get it. They initially caved to that, rescinding the invitation. But, of course, local LGBTQ plus groups vowed to withdraw from the event unless the team reversed course and did invite them. Team eventually did reverse course, re-invited the sisters to take part. And that's when Clayton Kershaw prompted the Dodgers about Christian faith and family day. He said it's nothing to do with pride or LGBT community, just acknowledging faith and family day. Washington Nationals pitcher Trevor Williams has spoken out in favor of Clayton Kershaw. He said he disagrees with the Dodgers' decision to reinvite them. He says a Major League Baseball game is a place where people from all walks of life should feel welcomed, something I greatly respect and support. This is the purpose of different themed nights hosted by the organization, including Pride Night. Now, Williams is a devout Catholic, and he said in a statement on Twitter, to invite and honor a group that makes a blatant and deeply offensive mockery of my religion and the religion of over 4 million people in the Los Angeles County alone undermines the values of respect and inclusivity that should be upheld by any organization. Now, at least one nun spoke out in support of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Joanne de Quattro, who is a Catholic Sister of the Holy Names, wrote a letter to the editor of the LA Times in support. Said, should not give in to pressure from anti-inclusion groups, which only serve to divide rather than unite our society. What does she think the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence are doing? Spoke with American Magazine, offering support. She says, for me, it's about trying to embrace the people who might be different from us, because Jesus said, come to the table, not you don't deserve a place at the table. Love it when people reinterpret the Bible. Not that I'm any super expert, but it's amazing how people will do that and put it in their own terms. From the AP via Yahoo comes this story about Air New Zealand. It's kind of humorous. I can see how some would be rankled. I can see how others, again, find it humorous. I'll tell you why in a second. So New Zealand airline, their national airline, Air New Zealand, is asking passengers to step on the scales before they board international flights. Air New Zealand says it wants to weigh 10,000 passengers during a month-long survey so pilots can better know the weight and balance of their planes before takeoff. Really? Okay. But the numbers from the scales won't be flashing up for all to see. There will be no visible display anywhere, the airline promised, and the weigh-in data will remain anonymous even to airline staff. We weigh everything that goes on the aircraft, from the cargo to the meals on board to the luggage in the hold, said Alistair James, a load control improvement specialist for the airline in a statement. For customers, crew, and cabin bags, we use average weights, which we get from doing this survey. Indeed, the numbers are required by the nation's industry watchdog, the Civil Aviation Authority. Under that, the rules of the authority, airlines have various options to estimate passenger weight. One option, periodically carry out surveys like the one Air New Zealand is doing to establish an average weight. Another option is to accept a standard weight set by the authority. Currently, the authority's designated weight for people 13 and over is 86 kilograms, which is 190 pounds, which includes carry-on luggage. The authority last changed the average passenger weight in 2004, increasing it from 77 kilograms, which is about 170 pounds. Health statistics show New Zealanders are becoming heavier. The latest National Health Survey put the adult obesity rate at 34%, up from 31% a year earlier. Childhood obesity rates increased from 13% or to 13% from 10%. Customers on Air New Zealand domestic flights were asked to weigh in a couple of years ago. James said there was nothing for passengers to fear by stepping on the scales. It's simple, it's voluntary, and by weighing in, you'll be helping us to fly you safely and efficiently every time. Airline said the survey began this week and will run through July 2nd. I'll tell you why that's funny. Okay, you know, now hearing me talk ad nauseum, I guide paddleboard and kayak tours. As I said, bioluminescence is back in the Indian River Lagoon, so that's what I'll be doing most of the summer. Excuse me, taking a sip of water. That's what I'll be doing most of the summer, staying hydrated. like I'm supposed to be doing when I'm out in the water. So I'll be doing that, and we have certain vessels that have weight limits. And we have had people approach us, and we ask them for their weight, because if they want certain types of vessels, those are weight sensitive. They are not built to hold people like Yokozuna from the old WWF or WWE. They're not built to hold the one-man gang or Big Boss Man or people like that. They are not built that way, or Andre the Giant. Why? Because they're just not built that way. So we have these, you know, we have single kayaks, which hold roughly 275 pounds. We have tandem kayaks, which are rated for 500 pounds. Most of our paddle boards are 275 to 300 as well. They say these SUP ATXs will hold 400. Well, we get people that walk up for these clear kayaks. These are smaller. These are Pyrex dishes with chairs in them. That's what they look like. They look like they're shaped like those old banana boats you used to get when you get a banana split. I used to take those things when I was a kid up in my summers in Wisconsin. I'd take them from the dairymaid up there, and I'd walk them over to the public beach. I put them in this little creek that ran from our lake into the next lake. I'd watch that little banana boat float. It was cool. But so we get these people that come up wanting clear kayaks, and it says they're under the weight limit, and they clearly are not. Look, I'm not knocking anybody's weight. I'm just telling you a general safety feature. So I've had a couple times that people have sank these things. I had people overturn a regular tandem kayak because, yes, they jumped the weight limit of 500 pounds. I'm sorry. You know, we could have accommodated, but if you're not truthful, you know, you can't help. It's sort of like, you know, saying you're 230 pounds and you want to fight as a heavyweight and you really only weigh 182 and you're fighting some guy that weighs 240. You're going to get crunched. So, yeah, when you see this, this weight thing, one of my bosses and I, we make jokes all the time. It's like I'll be wearing my sunglasses and I'll say 250, and then I'll pull my sunglasses down and just sort of shake my head and say no. I've never actually done that to anyone. No, I'm not a cruel bastard like that. It's not like I'm a prime cut anyway, but still, it's funny to hear this, that they're doing this. On the other hand, it's kind of scary, too, when you think about it. You mean like they don't know? They can't figure it out? I would think that they would have a way to weigh the aircraft before they ever take off. I also think if they get somebody that comes on that's seriously obese, that they have a way to give them their own row or whatever. I mean, I think that's it's humiliating to have somebody say you can't fly because you're too fat or whatever. But by the same token, have a little bit of pride. I mean, and have a little bit of reality. Christ, if you're weighing in at 600 pounds, why are you flying in the first place? Get out there and do a little jogging. I mean, I'm not asking you to run fast. I mean, Jesus, just a couple of sit-ups now and then. Crap. I mean, when you see people that are like that, it's like, come on. Then I know, hey, there are medical reasons. It happens. I get it. But doesn't matter. I mean, take a little initiative. Finally, in terms of referencing anything from Yahoo anyway, is this quasi-hilarious article on the debt ceiling and its economic impact in the U.S. It really is hilarious, although I'm pretty sure that wasn't the intent. Anyway, here, according to Yahoo and its experts, are five takeaways. One, does very little to balance the budget. Gee, really? Gosh, I thought the government always ran a balanced budget. Out of control spending was just a myth. Good God. Why did they even put that in there? Balance the budget. That's a joke. Two, these people are morons. They're just absolute morons. They talk about student debt repayment. For the record, student debt here's what they said. Did I copy the article? Gosh, I didn't. Doesn't really matter. They said, people are going to take a hit because this will restore student debt. You'll have to start paying back student debt. So this is good. Americans are going to take a hit in the pocketbook. Their income is going to be affected. These people are morons. Student debt repayment has nothing to do with the income of Americans. But basically, since COVID, and especially those with those idiot states and localities that have increased the required minimum wage, income isn't the issue. The issue is people repaying debt they promised to repay when they took on the debt in the first place. It has nothing to do with individual income. Nice try, though, Yahoo. Experts. Yes, air quote around experts. Three, again, absolute morons. It isn't taking anything away from individuals who actually earn a living. They say it's taking away from Social Security recipients. It's taking away from those who are on entitlement programs, and they're not entitlement programs. Some of them are. It isn't taking anything away from individuals who actually earn a living. It does require people to show actual need. And work requirements requires people to get off their ass to at least lessen the burden, you know, the burden placed on actual earners, i.e. taxpayers. You know, they said, oh, this is going to have an effect on the rock solid job market. Really? There is no rock solid job market. What we have, again, to refresh the collective memory, are tons of jobs available. They're available because people who got paid not to work during the COVID pandemic haven't fully returned to the workforce yet. And again, for the record, government doesn't fund jobs in the first place, especially in the private sector. But they have these people, they say businesses fund jobs. Jobs won't be funded with this, with some of the cutbacks. What? Hawkeye Mike sent me a text about the plane stuff, that they were already making an issue with that. Obese people buy two seats on airplanes. Make it a buy two seats, and then the standard being if you can't fit in the seat. But, of course, all the fat groups screamed, and, of course, being fat is now legitimate, like Lizzo. Five, they say this stuff. I'm going to pull the article. It's not hard for me to find it, so I'm going to pull it. These people, I don't get from which side of their collective mouth they are talking here. Because they're talking on one side, good. They're talking on the other that it's bad. But they can't even decide. Individuals will be hit, they say, but it won't be a big enough hit to tip us into recession. And how exactly does default lead to lost household wealth? That's what they said. Default will result in lost household wealth. Dr. Thomas Sowell said something interestingly a couple of years ago. In 2015 to 2019, I think he said, the Forbes 400 actually lost collectively $19 billion. But what happened from starting in late 2016 on? We actually had a very strong economy. I mean, good God, we saw via COVID that the only effect government has is when it meddles too deeply. That's when it's a big fat negative. Yes, default could be catastrophic, but to say we need not to default so that other countries, businesses, and individuals will buy up more debt does not make the economy stronger. It merely further deepens our collective indebtedness. God. You know, I forgot another way to interact with our show, of course, because we have three listeners on our phone line. It's 319-527-6706. You can listen in that way, hear the whole show, and if you want to chime in, you just hit the one, of course, and I get the little hand signal. That's another way to interact. Okay, here's another one. Wall Street shakes as bipartisan lawmakers draft a bill to reclaim bailed out bank funds. And this is one that's really hacking me off, like I said. Bank executives who collect lavish compensation while taxpayer bail out their institutions would be forced to reimburse Americans for the expense under a new bill filed by both steadfast conservative Republican and stridently liberal Democrat lawmakers. Representative Ken Buck of Colorado, Republican. Democrat Katie Porter of California. Republican Victoria Sparks of Indiana. Democrat Ruben Gallego of Arizona. And Marie Glusenkamp Perez, Democrat of Washington, introduced the bipartisan Failed Bank Executives Clawback Act, which directly targets, quote, unjust compensation earned by executives who threaten our financial system and economy. The bill empowers federal watchdogs to, quote, claw back compensation from bank executives who profit off of their bank's mismanagement of deposits, a statement from the bill's sponsor reads, noting that, quote, following the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank in March 2023, reports emerged that bank executives made millions in stock sales and bonuses from their reckless management in the months leading up to the bank failure. They always come up with that, by the way. Rarely does it bear out fully that way. Sometimes it has. Problem with publicly traded companies. I mean, they are run by human beings. Here's some quotes. Ken Buck, working Americans should not have to foot the bill for the failures of Silicon Valley Bank executives, said Buck. I'm proud to lead this bipartisan bill to make bank CEOs more accountable for any risky financial decisions they make. You mean like a run on banks? How does a CEO have control over a run on banks? He or she does not. You know what usually happens? It's usually some insider in government or the FDIC or some other scumbag who starts putting the word out, creates runs. Not bank executives. Then Katie Porter said, bank executives shouldn't be rewarded when they oversee bank failures, and they shouldn't be incentivized to put Americans' money at heightened risk for bigger payouts. Democrats and Republicans agree, when leaders at big banks engage in reckless risk-taking, they should be held accountable. Well, thus far, we've not seen reckless risk-taking. We've seen some decisions maybe by some banks that, you know, makes you wonder sometimes, but those are calculated risks. Now, Sparks said, we cannot be a country with institutions too big to fail and policies where reckless executives are not held accountable and shift the risk to taxpayers. The general public should not be on the hook for bad business decisions. Well, then don't pay out those who have deposits over the statutory limit. Don't pay out uninsured deposits. Joker from Arizona said, who was that? Oh, Gallego. Hardworking Arizonans and small businesses were the ones who paid the price when Silicon Valley Bank failed. All the while, SVB's executives ran off into the sunset fat with cash from bonuses they paid themselves. That's not how our system should work, and we should claw back those types of payouts. But SVB's failure was years in the making. We need these bank executives to have skin in the game. I am proud to lead this bipartisan legislation to hold bank executives accountable when their mismanagement and incompetence hurts the American people. Glusenkamp Perez chimed in, after Silicon Valley bank executives lined their pockets with big bonuses, people, businesses, and the entire economy suffered. We need to make sure the people who make reckless decisions that throw the banking system into turmoil can't walk away with millions of dollars as rewards, and this bipartisan bill makes that possible. Senators Elizabeth Warren, Josh Hawley, Catherine Cortez Masto, and Mike Braun introduced a companion bill in the Senate. This is a joke. On so many levels, the stupidity, the grandstanding, most of all the duplicity, is nothing short of mind-boggling. First, are we to believe that these banks failed because CEOs were embezzling? If that's the case, we don't need a bill to reclaim those funds. There are already laws and mechanisms in place to do that. Why do we need a bill? We have mechanisms in place, laws in place. We have that. Second, did we not have 11 banks, at least, that made sizable, as in the billions of dollars, deposits to shore up First Republic Bank? And the ringleader, J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon, did he not say that he orchestrated it, at least in part, due to the headaches he went through in their government-orchestrated takeover of Bear Stearns back in 2008? So what happened to First Republic Bank? Fed seized it. Who took it over? Yes, J.P. Morgan Chase. So what happens to the deposits? Remember, it was noted that they were uninsured and per statute had to remain there for 120 days. What happens to the deposits made by the 10 or so other banks? Do they simply lose out? If so, won't they be a bit more than pissed off at Jamie Dimon and Chase? I sure as hell wouldn't, as a bank CEO, ever participate in that kind of farce again, especially if Jamie Dimon is the ringleader. But again, I ask, do those banks get their funds back? On what basis did the feds seize First Republic, especially knowing the deposits made by those, quote, other, quote, unquote, too big to fail institutions? We're talking collectively, I believe it was $100 billion in deposits that were made, and yet the feds still seized them? Here, though, is the red flag statement in all that. It was a classic. It was made famous by Barack Obama. Skin in the game. Remember, he said, oh, these people don't have skin in the game. Look at the money the Obamas have made since leaving office. They got that Netflix deal, supposedly worth over $50 million a year. What skin in the game did they sacrifice? I'll tell you where their skin in the game came from. It came from us, ears. They turned it into $50 million a year. Guess who sat on the board of Netflix at the time that deal was made? Susan Rice. Yes, that Susan Rice. Yet another reason not to watch Netflix. In any event, that's quite the capitalistic deal for a couple of socialists who are advocates of wealth redistribution. But again, what the hell with quote-unquote skin in the game? How does that have any effect? They most likely owned shares and or had deposits. And they don't just write themselves checks. They make it sound like, you get a bonus, you get a bonus. It doesn't work that way. Any size of company knows it doesn't work that. You don't just start writing out checks and throwing money around. Yes, some people do that. Those people are called prisoners. They're called jailbirds. Finally, if they did take bonuses right before the Fed seizure, knowing they were going to be seized, do you think maybe, just maybe, they might have been, quote, tipped off, i.e. in collusion with some feds? In other words, maybe we should be looking at where that money trail ultimately leads, not the initial receiver of the funds. My guess is that there are some feds, government types, who have been enriched by all this as well. Not just bank CEOs. Bank CEOs are just a sacrificial lamb on which they will grandstand. Bank CEOs. Happened in the, remember, I talked about this before, Resolution Trust Corp. It was literally run by failed CEO executives who were just going after successful thrift organizations. Savings and loans. I mean, they talk about the savings and loan crisis. You know who created that? Literally, our government. Why? Because failed thrift executives, government, our banking committees, my God, there's people out there holding goodwill on their books, but they don't have the reserves. Well, guess what? They had the goodwill because they took over institutions that were in trouble. So they allowed that on their books. So what did they do? They just, in the blink, a stroke of a pen, after a vote, said, deduct that from capital reserves. You are now a failed institution. We are taking you over. God. You all remember when I talked about my congressman, Democrat Maxwell Frost, a few months ago? He's the guy who raised roughly $3 million. 10 times the amount of all his opponents combined. But he couldn't get housing in D.C. because he didn't have any money and he had poor credit, even though he still had over $2 million in his campaign account. So I got an email from him a few weeks ago. The email is titled, Four Things I've Learned as Your New Congressman. I'll forgive him for using four numerically instead of actually spelling it out. He obviously knows no better. So here are the four things my non-responsive congressman has learned. I say non-responsive because I've tweeted at him a couple times. He's never answered. Oh, and by the way, congress members aren't elected to learn at our expense. They're elected to serve and actually run government, which includes financial management, which presumably wouldn't include people who can't manage credit and get housing when they have over $2 million remaining in the good old campaign account. First thing, he says, our Central Florida community is strong and bright. Goes on to say, I saw it when 1,000 plus of you joined me at my Orlando swearing-in ceremony, visited tons of local businesses, and attended your events. Okay, define tons. And why are you attending all our events? And why the separate swearing-in ceremony at which 1,000 plus people were in attendance? How much did that cost? I'm not even going to bother to ask who paid for it. I already know the answer to that one. Second thing he's learned, as someone who's been organizing against gun violence, it's essential now more than ever that we pass life-saving legislation. He says, that's why my first bill, if passed, would establish an Office of Gun Violence Prevention, because an issue this complex requires people working on it daily. Wait, now, you mean the ATF, various congressional committees, myriad executive branch committees, agencies, not to mention numerous other anti-Second Amendment organizations, aren't already doing this? Head slap. All it takes is another office. Third, that he's learned, our office can help you cut through Washington red tape. We've already helped nearly 400 Central Floridians with requests from federal agencies and have responded to 8,000 letters from y'all on issues ranging from housing to immigration. Hey, here's an idea. I think it's a good one. How about eliminating the red tape in the first place? We do not need an office full of overpaid, government-leeching, blood-sucking staffers to negotiate red tape. We need for there to be no red tape. God, this guy, I swear to God, he must be Presbyterian, because Presbyterians are big on committee meetings and setting up another committee and setting up another position. I mean, I was born and raised Presbyterian, but God, that's a group of people that can figure out how to turn something into a committee meeting in a heartbeat. Here's the fourth thing he learned. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. In D.C. and Orlando, my team are doing all we can to defend reproductive rights, housing affordability, Social Security and Medicare, fight attacks on our democracy, and more. And we're working on bringing home millions to help support our communities and the folks who need it most. The phrase, working on bringing home millions, gives us a link to this website that lists the projects that got considered for funding this year, as well as guidelines for applying. To wit, here are some of the ones that appropriations requests, blah, 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 programmatic, community project funding, blah. So here's some of the community funding requests, projects requested. Biff Low Quality Affordable Housing Small House Project. Anybody in Central Florida who hears Biff Low and Quality Affordable Housing Small House Project in the same sentence, in the same phrase, got to be laughing their ass off right now. Project recipient would be the Area Agency on Aging of Central Florida, Inc. Requesting $750,000, this project is for the construction of small houses to provide quality, affordable housing to multi-generational, low-income populations of Biff Low, including seniors, caregivers, aged-out foster youth, veterans, among others. Jesus effing Christ, people, $750,000 in Biff Low, Florida, would buy the whole damn town. Literally, Biff Low, Florida, it's a nothing burger town, and yet somehow someone is requesting $750,000 to be spent in this place. Another one, community center rehabilitation. This project is to rehabilitate the multi-purpose community center to expand space available to be used for the Community Violence Intervention Project, which helps address mental health and substance abuse, provide employment services, outreach, and housing services. Really? Who's the recipient? City of Orlando. How much? $750,000 for one project location. Here's one. Creating multifamily affordable housing. Town of Eatonville, which is a historically black community north of Winter Park. Very interesting place. I believe Zora Neale Hurston was from Eatonville. So this project is to convert vacant property that the town owns into a multifamily housing apartment building to serve as affordable housing. $5,252,800. The city owns it. They need $5 million to develop it. It's another one. Harrelson Estates Subdivision Stormwater Management Improvements. For a place that experiences frequent flooding largely caused by an undersized drainage system. This is the city of Orlando that needs this. Several streets in Orlando. The requested amount is $2 million. Here's an idea. Let those that developed it pay for it. Those that developed it pay for it. God, that's just some of it. That's the kind of stuff we're dealing with. Housing Rehabilitation and Affordability Preservation Program, $500,000, in the city of Winter Park. Does anyone know about the city of Winter Park? That happens to be right very near where I live. The city of Winter Park. The kind of old money there, it was a winter playground for rich Northeasterners years ago, or people whose kids couldn't get into Ivy League schools. Rollins College is where that is located. Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, went there. His family had a huge house on one of the lakes there. Horace Grant owned a house on one of those lakes. It's a beautiful city. But this project is to make safety, accessibility, and energy efficiency improvements to low and moderate income owner-occupied single-family households to preserve the affordability of housing stock. $500,000 grant. Do you realize in Winter Park, Florida, what a $500,000 grant, how far that will go? Nowhere. Nowhere and do nothing. The links... Central Station Bus Terminal Retrofit for $3 million for the Central Florida Regional Transportation Authority, which, by the way, that thing was outfitted and retrofitted when they put a SunRail stop there about 8 years ago. $3 million to accommodate 60-foot buses, to address the issue of 60-foot buses blocking traffic. How about this? Talk to the city of Orlando about their traffic pattern. You don't need $3 million to the Central Florida Regional Transportation Authority. Here's another one. Lynx Solar Technology for Bus Shelters and Shelter Refacing. This is to install new solar lighting on existing bus shelters to improve safety and establish independence from the electrical power grid for $2.1 million. That's what this guy says he's bringing home. Now, this clown also put out a guide, their guidelines for their, which I get, because I'm having sat on a private foundation, I understand the whole guidelines thing. But this one's a beauty, because it's 41 damn pages. That's right, 41 damn pages on their guidelines. This literally can be handled in 3 pages. How do I know? Because our private foundation for our civic club, which is worth about $10 million, has a 3-page guideline. Now, this one needs 41 pages for their community project funding guide. 41 pages. It also talks about a conflict of interest policy. That's about 3 pages worth. We have one, too. It's a whole page, not even a whole page, on one page. That's what we're dealing with, folks. That's my congressman. I'll say this, he now has a phone number listed at least. Guy, so please. Hey, a Florida freshman congresswoman has moved to expel California Democrat Adam Schiff from office over his continued lies about the Russia collusion hoax. As is typical, Schiff is now making himself out as the victim. He says the Durham report proved nothing and, in fact, actually showed Trump colluded with Russia deeper than alleged. This guy is delusional. I back that up by the fact that he appeared in an interview on MSDNC. Seriously. Anna Paulina Luna is the Florida congresswoman, by the way. She said the following, and it's pretty spot on. Where is it? I just had it here in the article. She said, he used his position on House intelligence to push a lie that cost American taxpayers millions of dollars and abused the trust placed in him as chairman. The Durham report makes it clear that the Russian collusion was a lie from day one, and Schiff knowingly used his position in an attempt to divide our country. Here's what this moron said, though, to fire back. First of all, he did this breaking news on Twitter. A MAGA Republican member of Congress just filed a motion to expel me from the U.S. House of Representatives. I stood up to Donald Trump and held extreme MAGA forces accountable. Now they want payback. They'll go after anyone who defends the rule of law. He also said, when this dark chapter of our history is written, it will reflect that those Republicans who lacked the courage to stand up President of U.S. history, Donald Trump, consoled themselves by attacking those who did. Good God. Like I said, for his part, he didn't let his delusion keep him silent. He responded with that tweet. As for Adam Schiff and the rule of law, no two things are more mutually exclusive than the terms Adam Schiff and rule of law. The very last thing Adam Schiff has ever done is, quote, defend the rule of law. It ain't one he'll be crossing off his bucket list anytime soon either, because it's probably one thing he's never sought out to do in the first place. Hey, welcome Duck Northwest Media to our chat room. In the meanwhile, on our phones, we have my big sister. We have Sue from New Mexico, Hawkeye Mike. Avid Mike is also listening in, I believe. Maybe sure, maybe not. Let me just make sure. That number looks familiar. It looks familiar, so I want to make sure. I'm going to double check because I think it's him. He says it's him. It is him. Okay, so we got the two mics on today. I'm going to have them both on a little bit later. AOC might quit Twitter, folks. This is tragic. AOC might quit Twitter. Due to the increasing prominence of a parody account imitating her, it's called Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez Press Release Parody. Says at one point, this might be wine talking, but I've got a crush on Elon Musk. She gets all mad. She says, FYI, there's a fake account on here impersonating me and going viral. The Twitter CEO has engaged in boosting visibility. It is releasing false policy statements and gaining spread. I am assessing with my team how to move forward. In the meantime, be careful for what you see. Parody account said, after brainstorming with my staff, I'm going to push Congress to make it illegal to joke, laugh, or make fun of me. Parody should be illegal. Oh, God, AOC. It's amazing, isn't it, how Big Left is so against censorship and is so pro-First Amendment for all Americans? Yeah, that was a joke. They're not against censorship. They're just against getting caught lying. God, I hope, you know what, I hope she does an OnlyFans account instead and does porn. Not that I'd sign up, but I'd gladly accept anyone forwarding stuff to me. Just saying. Back to the Durham report. Apparently, the FBI abruptly ended four different investigations into the Clinton Foundation. Now, on the surface, of course, it could be a nothing burger, except the Durham report also concluded that it was the 2016 Hillary Clinton presidential campaign that colluded with the FBI and various FISA courts to push the narrative of the Russia collusion hoax in the first place. Yeah, how about that? four different investigations that they shut down. Andrew McCabe played a key role, former deputy director of the FBI. James Comey, the director, led the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email server. Yeah, but nothing to see here, folks. Three separate field offices in Washington, D.C., Little Rock, Arkansas, New York City, open investigations into possible criminal activity involving the Clinton Foundation, but then were shut down less than 1 year before the November 2016 election. One person, McCabe, said, "There's nothing here, and why are we even doing this?" And that McCabe's approval would be required before any further investigation would be done. James Comey demanded through an intermediary that the New York field office, quote, cease and desist their Clinton Foundation investigation. Yeah, nothing to see. Nothing to see there. House GOP holds FBI Director Chris Wray in contempt, as do I, naturally. But in this case, the Oversight Committee Chair, Kentucky GOP Rep. James Comer. It's worth noting, by the way, others held in contempt of Congress by a GOP-led House terms have had terrible results. Oh, wait, that's supposed to say not one damn thing has happened to them. You know, like Eric Holder, Obama-era Attorney General. He avoided a trial, seemingly any and all punishment, after a Dem-led Congress voted to hold former AG Bill Barr and former Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross in contempt. Here's the difference, by the way. Barr and Ross were held in contempt over whether or not a citizenship question should be on the 2020 census. Seriously. They didn't even respond to about a citizenship question on the 2020 census because it was idiotic. Seriously, the Democrat-led Congress actually pursued the of a single question on the U.S. census and pursued contempt charges over it. Holder, oh, he was only ignoring subpoenas regarding the Fast and Furious scandal where we were taking confiscated guns and selling them to the cartels during the Obama years. Here's another difference. The Holder resolution was actually supported on two different subpoenas by 17 and 21 Democrats at the time. So there's that. In the case of Ray, I suspect he will address it the same way the rest of La Dopey Nostra has addressed official inquiry. He will ignore it. I also think this is, by the way, this is Speaker McCarthy trying to distract from the debt ceiling deal. By the way, that might not be a done deal. And West Virginia, Governor Jim Justice, in the latest poll, has gotten a 20-plus point lead over Joe Manchin, Senator Joe Manchin, in Senate polls. Governor Jim Justice announced that he is taking on Joe Manchin. So guess what has happened? Jim Justice III is being targeted for his coal companies by several different divisions within the Department of Justice and the Department of the Interior. And yes, it's raising eyebrows because it comes just days after this poll showed Governor Jim Justice was beating Joe Manchin by 22 points. As somebody else said, it's utterly brazen. Somebody else said, what's happening to other companies? Because most of these violations are standard. It's sort of like the restaurant, there's no such thing as a clean restaurant. They'll always find something. Same thing in the mining industry, in coal mining. They always find something that they can hold over you. This is why you tread very lightly when it comes to the world of politics. Manchin is fine getting support from the GOP and conservatives when he needs it. But obviously he has friends on both sides of the aisle, which isn't a surprise. The question becomes, as I said, are other mining companies facing the same notices or the same scrutiny? Is it mere coincidence that it's happening just days after polls show Manchin behind by 20 points? Is it not ironic that Jim Justice III apparently isn't above reproach in his business dealings, while a certain family that is part of Manchin's party has been protected both by media and government insiders at every turn. Ironic. Before we go to break, and then I'll come back, have some talkers on. Little quick pre-break internet laughing from the Babylon Bee. Like I said, everything today is from the Babylon Bee. 10 warning signs you're a pathetic beta male. Yep, 10 warning signs that you are a pathetic beta male. 1, ordering a filet instead of a 42-ounce tomahawk. Filet is a French word. A tomahawk is an axe. Eat a real steak, bro. 2, you once thought about petting a cat. Really? A cat? Come on, softy. You open the door for a lady. Weak sauce. Man up and slam it in her face. 4, you wear an oven mitt to take hot things out of the oven. Real men aren't afraid to melt their fingerprints off. 5, you asked for help while bench pressing 225. You may as well join a spin class. 6, somebody taking your picture said, say cheese, and you said, cheese. You emitted a sound of pain the last time someone stabbed you. 8, you use a lighter to start a fire, meaning you've abandoned thousands of years of manly old school fire starting tradition. 9, you kissed a girl who has kissed another man before you met, therefore you kissed a dude. And number 10, sign that you are a pathetic beta male. You cried at any point in your life other than Gladiator. We will also accept Saving Private Ryan, or Master and Commander. There is another internet laughy. Before I come back from break, continuing our tribute, which I'm continuing into June, of George Harrison and John Lennon. This is Give Me Love from the Living in the Material World album. Be back in 3.5 minutes.
Give me life, give me life, give me life.
Was the late, great George Harrison with Give Me Love from his Living in the Material World album. Just fantastic stuff. It's part of my tribute to two great guitarists who are no longer here. So I'm bringing in Hawkeye Mike, Avid Mike. How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing well,
Hank. Stuff there.
Good, good. So we got a couple stories out, but there's one we'll get to that I really want you guys' opinion on, of course. But first one, the Georgia Bulldogs have blown off their invitation to the White House. What do you guys think? There's anything to it, or do you think they're just doing it for the hell of it? I'll start with you, Avid Mike. What do you think? You think they're just blowing it off because they want to, or because of some stuff that's come out against, you know, Georgia, you know, with the All-Star game last year?
I think they're just doing it to do it. I mean, I don't think it really – it isn't what it used to be. I just don't think it's – because it made, like, a blip on the news, and nothing else has been said about it, so – at least what I've seen. So I just don't think it's anything major, anything behind it.
Hawkeye Mike, what about you? You think the same thing, or do you think there's something to it?
Well, I don't know. I don't know this story that well, but I know there's been some other issues, you know, like with the LSU women's team not going, and then they changed their mind, and then they went, so which kind of surprised me because I thought they were pretty mad at Jill Biden. But so, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of with Avid Mike on this one. I don't know if you want to read too much into it. Maybe just a lack of enthusiasm.
I think part of it, you know, they yanked the All-Star game from Atlanta, you know, last year or the year before for in favor of Denver, who actually had less minority people and less minority businesses than Atlanta, but they said it was over their election law. But according to what I read, it's, you know, they say it's just schedule and all that. But I mean, I just think, you know, Avid Mike said, there's really not much to a White House invite anymore. Next up, this is interesting. If you're like me and you're anti-LeBron James, the Heat had a 3-game lead on the Celtics, and then the Celtics came back, and then the Heat ended up pulling it off. So you think they have a shot against the Nuggets or not? Either of you. Hawk and Mike, you think they have a shot?
Well, you know, being out here in Denver, people are pretty high on the Nuggets, and they seem to be playing pretty well. So I really do think they have an edge here. I was surprised about Miami after blowing 3 games. And then the Celtics, you know, have a long history of winning game sevens, and I really thought they were going to do it, especially at home, and they just kind of dropped dead in game seven and let Miami win it. But I give Miami credit, too. No, I think Denver's going to win. We'll see.
Yeah. Avid Mike, how about you? Do you think
it's the NBA? So we all know it's scripted. So I can't stand the NBA. And why not have a number 8 seed that had to do the play-in game win the NBA title? You know, Disney would do a movie about it, or Netflix, one of the two. So
yeah, Netflix,
I don't know.
Netflix.
I'm with Hawkeye Mike. I really think Denver is the better team. Boston didn't know how to close out third periods, and that's why they got down 3-0. So,
yeah. I just love the fact that the Nuggets swept the Lakers, and hopefully LeBron will retire. I mean, don't get me wrong. LeBron is a great player. If you've seen him in person, he is a fantastic player, fantastic talent. He's just a jackwagon, so I don't, you know. And now, Avid Mike, you probably know more about this than Hawkeye Mike. Well, you guys see the news. You know who Mackenzie Milton is. He's just taken a job, joined the staff at Tennessee. So he's meeting up with former coach. Yeah, so he played at UCF. He got that terrible injury against South Florida. Josh Heupel only coached him for 1 year. Before that, he was coached by Scott Frost. which is kind of, you know, it's
frosty.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so you know, he decided he wasn't going to try and make it to the pros. And, you know, he had that terrible knee injury, but he's joined a Tennessee staff. I think that's awesome. I hope he does well there. But, you know, I also think it's kind of interesting that, you know, he's going with Josh Heupel, who, you know, left UCF kind of abruptly when their athletic director left and took the Tennessee job. So,
yep.
But it's a good situation. I just like to see that
yeah.
happen. You know?
Well, he knows
so
the system. I mean, he knows the system, so it's a good – and he was really successful in that system, so it makes sense to be part of that team. So,
yeah. In the world of the semi-pathetic, you guys maybe you probably haven't seen this because you guys probably don't follow track and field like I do. But Hawkeye Mike, I figured you'll appreciate this because we've seen the pathetic stuff in the past. So Nigel Amos, who is Botswana's first ever Olympic medal winner, he's selling his gold medal because he's been banned from competition over a drug, you know, doping or whatever, and so he says he has no way to support his family. Is that like pathetic, or is that just? I mean,
well,
it's sad.
I didn't know about this, but that's you know, it's kind of sad, really, if that's what's if he feels like he has to do that. You know, I don't know how much these guys make, but you know, it sounds like if he was banned for doping, I mean, is he saying it was a bum rap, or is he not denying that, you know, he, cause that's a whole lot different than if he was being banned for, you know, not getting a COVID vaccination or something like that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that part of it. But, I mean, this guy, he was, at the time, he still holds the world record for 20 and under. I mean, he ran second in that blistering 800 in 2012. If you've never watched it, Google it and watch it. David Ryudisha, 2012 Olympic 800 meter. I mean, he just obliterated the record and just, I mean, he was just a man among boys. But this guy ran second and still has the third fastest time ever. But he's 29, and so he says he's going to compete again after his ban, but he's going to be turning like 33 or so at that point. But it's just, I mean,
but by the
way,
when you're on track and field, Hank, I was wondering, did you see someone was posting, I know we're, you know, both on I think I saw it on Facebook, the old 1972 gold medal run of Dave Waddle in the 800.
Oh, that's
and
that was...
I forgot about that guy with the cap, and it was an unbelievable. They were talking and they're doing the race. I you know, it's been a long time. I just remembered as a little kid, and they're talking about how he's back and he's not going to be. And he comes from way behind, catches up with the front crowd, and then barely wins at the end. It was an unbelievable race.
And he got through every round that way. I mean, like his prelim round, it was like, you know, Waddle's the American record holder. Is he, you know, he's out already, and then he comes back and, you know, I think he finished second in his prelim and then second in his semifinal, or maybe first in his semifinal, and then came out of nowhere in that final. And he was way back. And unlike David Ryudisha, who just went out in like 50.3 or something and just never looked back. And I'm still the only person that's come close to breaking a minute 40 for the 800.
And
so.
He's wearing a hat the whole time. I wonder if anybody could get away with that now.
Oh, of course they could now. Now they absolutely would. Here's some odd news. I think you guys will appreciate this. The world governing body of badminton has upheld a ban on Russia for international competition. Any thoughts on that from either of you? Yeah, I thought so. As in, when did badminton?
Well, they must have an anti-woke crowd.
When did badminton?
The Democrats hate Russia though. So yeah.
When did badminton reach such elevated status? I mean, seriously, this is a country is banned from international badminton. I'm embarrassed.
I didn't know Russia was a power in badminton.
Well, I'm embarrassed to ask if the U.S. is any good at it. Especially now that everybody's playing pickleball or whatever. I mean, you know what, though? Here's what I'm really scared of. Do we have guys playing on the U.S. women's team? That's the part I'm really afraid of. We probably do. I mean, it's probably even scarier.
If we do,
well,
we call
you know,
it shuttlecock.
It's,
we don't
it's,
call
it's
it
always very good to be light on your feet in that sport, so, you know.
Yeah. So did you guys read this about the Miami of Ohio women's basketball coach? What happened last month with her? Did either of you see that?
No, I didn't.
Not familiar. No. Nope.
So she resigned after texts revealed an inappropriate relationship with one of her players. Okay, so, you know, maybe, you know, should be fine. But here's the thing. Over an 11-day period, 180 texts between them. I don't send 180 texts in a month, but 180 texts in an 11-day period. That's I don't worry about that happening in Iowa Athletics. So, okay, let's another quick story. Stanley Cup Finals. Either of you guys following the Stanley Cup Finals?
I haven't been. I have to tell you, but maybe Evan Mike knows something about it.
Evan Mike, have you been following Evan Mike?
I've been watching it. I just being from I know this is the first time since the 90s that Florida is in it.
Yeah, the Panthers.
Panthers. Yeah, so that's what I know, and then that's about it.
Vegas.
My Red Wings didn't make the playoffs, so.
Yeah. Well,
after that, it was done.
Vegas, this is each of them is making their second trip. Vegas actually got there in their inaugural season, and then they lost to the Avalanche, actually. Oh, no. They lost to the Capitals. The Panthers lost to the Avalanche in 1996. So whoever wins this, it's their first. So that's kind of cool. But, yeah, I just wonder if anyone – you know, people don't seem to follow that much.
There's something about hockey in June, though, that just seems not right.
Yeah, I agree.
Even worse than the NBA in June.
Well, and then having a Florida-based team in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't make any
sense. Remember that
one
year
with the Canadians and the Leafs and everything.
Right. Well, remember that one year when the big joke was that the best hockey team is in the United States and the best basketball team is in Toronto when the Raptors won it? It was sort of like the jokes people made when they said the best rapper in the world is a white guy, meaning Eminem, and the best golfer is a black guy, meaning Tiger. So it was like, what the hell? The world is upside down.
Well,
okay.
Yeah, but all the players were from the right country, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. So how about the Glenn Schembechler story? Hawk and Mike, are you familiar with it?
I saw some of it. You might have to fill in the details. It was something to do with was he like a assistant AD or something like that?
I thought he was an assistant for other recruiting staff, but I don't. Evan Mike.
Okay,
you know
maybe
what
that's
position,
it. Maybe that's it.
What position was it? Was Evan Mike?
I can't remember. God, I'm trying to remember now.
I thought it was recruiting, but basically, he's resigning. It stems from. He liked a bunch of tweets that were deemed racist or sensitive. He did not tweet anything. He said nothing. He just liked some tweets.
It's all it takes anymore.
Yeah. So
amazing.
The internet's forever. I mean, but I guess any Big Ten school is gonna be somewhat woke in that regard. Especially after what happened, with us settling a lawsuit at Iowa. But, I mean, it seems to me, why weren't they looking at this before they hired him? That's
what would
Bo
say?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
was he like
who
a
knows?
Grandson? Was he a grandson?
No, he's the son. He's the son.
Yeah, he's
the son.
He's a junior, right? Or
okay.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's a junior. I think they have a different middle name. But, yeah, because Bo's name was Glenn as well. So, but, yeah, I mean, that's kind of –
I think Bo was a junior, actually.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, then that,
yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it was like out of nowhere. And, of course –
Well, what I want to know is who are the people that go back through and look for this stuff?
Yeah. Why weren't they looking?
They do is to live to try to find, reasons to be outraged.
But, it's funny. After I sold my company last year and I was putting stuff on and I was sort of looking at jobs and, kind of feeling the waters, but I didn't really want to have a real job anymore. But my wife said at the time, she said, everything you put on Facebook, prospective employers are looking at that. Luckily my boss now is more irreverent than I ever have been. But so she's right though. People are, companies look at that stuff now. But why didn't Michigan look at that? Or why didn't that's what I don't get. Why did it take
a legacy hire?
Yeah. I guess.
That's why. They look
past. Yeah, I really try to be apolitical myself when I'm on Facebook because it's just it's just it's a quagmire. You lose half your Facebook friends if you say the wrong thing. I mean, I always think of it as kind of a social thing anyway.
Yeah,
so I just try not to do that too much, you know.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of that way. So have you guys seen where Paul Crist has ended up?
No, but I heard his name pop up. I forgot to research it. Where did he end up at?
He's joining the Texas football staff as a special assistant to head coach Steve Sarkisian, a.k.a. Cutty Sark. He's going to be working with the offense. I don't know what the connection is between he and Sarkisian, but, I mean, this guy, I'm still kind of dumbfounded that Wisconsin fired him. You know,
because it happened so quick and it was mid-season too.
Yeah, they started 2-3. I mean, he went 67-26.
But yeah, it's not like he didn't have some success there.
Yeah,
you know, it would never happen at Iowa. I mean, if it did, Ferentz would have probably been fired a few years ago or something. But
he would have
been
fired.
They don't do that.
Year.
They don't operate. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, he was 2-time Big Ten Coach of the Year. 3 division titles. I mean, I was kind of shocked, but I'm not sure.
It's like Bo Pelini, you know.
Yeah, Bo Pelini.
Bo Pelini was 9 wins a year, and all Chris did was get him to the Big Ten, you know, championship, and then getting them, you know, into a Rose Bowl almost every year. So it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I still don't get it. But so, but Texas, that's what I don't get. I mean, I would have thought that he would have, you know, and maybe it was part of his settlement that he couldn't, you know, but, you know, that he couldn't stay in the Big Ten, but I don't see how that would be possible. I mean, I really don't.
You said he's being hired as an offensive consultant, but I don't really think of him or really Wisconsin football. They're sort of like Iowa. It's not like we, you know, gigantic offensive minds. It's pretty, you know, a smash mouth, line it up, run, and throw off the run. I mean, Iowa and Wisconsin are kind of mirror images of each other, I always thought.
Well, look at the SEC,
which makes for a great rivalry, actually.
Look at the SEC, though, because the perception is that the SEC runs all these, you know, innovative stuff. But
you're right.
But some of them do. But look at the successful teams in the SEC over the years. I mean, Alabama doesn't have to run all these newfangled plays or
no, they're
plays
pretty much pro set, run it. That Georgia, LSU, they're all that kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, so they have wrinkles certainly. That I wouldn't mind our own team having occasionally. But yeah, I just don't see the connection other than because it doesn't even say that they were friends or anything like that. So it just it says that he will work on a role similar to longtime TCU head coach Gary Patterson, who worked with their defense as a special assistant. So it's probably just I don't even know if he could be on the team, on the field. I don't, you know, there's all that stuff about consultants and all that stuff that can and can't be. So,
it would have made more sense to me if they said they'd hired him for defensive, you know, prowess or something.
No,
like that.
Well, that was Jim Leonard was the defensive guy. He was the
Jim
running coach guru for Wisconsin.
Well, Chris was a quarterback. I mean, he was an offensive
and
side.
I was surprised that Leonard didn't get the head coaching job. You think after what he'd done the last few years, now they kept him on, which was smart. But you had to think maybe he was not going to take offense at not being the head coach.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, and just who they brought in too, I think was the one that he's not. They kept him on for the bowl game, but he's left there.
I thought he was still on as AD. I mean, as a defensive coordinator, I didn't know he's gone. Okay.
No, he left after the bowl game. He coached the bowl game, and then he left. So, I'm not sure where he is. It doesn't say that he's anywhere now.
Well, you think someone would snap him up pretty quick or he'd get a head coaching job somewhere.
Well, I don't see it. I've looked for it. I'm looking for it, and I don't see that he's done anything. So just said he was leaving at the end of 2020. You know, he did coach the bowl game, I guess. So, you know,
yep.
But, I mean, that's kind of just crazy to me that they didn't even, you know. And maybe, you know, who knows, maybe they just wanted, you know, a change, you know.
Well, that was really revamping their team.
Well,
what were you saying?
I think they were.
No, go ahead.
My understanding was is a lot of people thought the reason why they got rid of Chris because they were worried about losing Leonard because he was kind of like the coach in waiting.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And that was. To not get the job.
And then not give him a shot. You know, that surprised me because They could have had him, and I knew he wanted the job, and they snubbed him, it seemed like to me, basically.
No, 100%.
I don't think he'll ever go back there, probably. Who knows? But I'm not sure how good Luke Fickell's going to do there. I really don't know.
The flavor of the month for winning the West.
Yeah, I do have respect for him, by the way, Fickell. I think he did a great job at Cincinnati, and he didn't do too badly at Ohio State when he had to fill in when Trussell, whatever.
Yeah.
It seems
yeah.
like a lifetime ago, right, when he was around. Wisconsin football going to change? Are they going to change their, you know, they've had sort of an Iowa-type philosophy offensively and defensively, too. And we'll see if they're going to, you know, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So their spring game didn't go too hot.
Didn't? Why? What happened at their spring game?
Oh, their quarterback that they brought in threw 5 interceptions.
And who was their flavor of the month for quarterback? Who did they bring in?
They brought in a kid from Houston.
Oh, okay.
Was the transfer guy that they got. What was his name?
I'll tell you, speaking of transfers, the one that shocks me is that kid from Nebraska, Casey Thompson, that he left when he did.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, by the way, on the Wisconsin quarterback situation, Iowa picked in the portal that I can't remember his name now, but the quarterback. And apparently they were really impressed with him in the spring, and he's the clear number two behind McNamara. I think they've got him slated ahead of
Joey Labus. Dexter Hill, I think his name is.
Well, he
was rated high, but they said at Wisconsin he was just he didn't know his arm strength or something. I don't know, but he supposedly has good arms.
He blew up too. He got big. He got heavy. But he's come in and looked good in spring practice for us. So.
Yeah. So the two elephants in the room, one Gary Barta retiring. So I'll start with Hawkeye Mike. Do you think it was voluntary, or do you think he was shown the door?
It's hard to know. I was going to ask for what your take was on it because I know you've been a little more animated about the guy. I think than I've been.
I blow hot and cold. Avin, Mike, what's your take? Because you were the one that let me know about it in the first place.
Yeah, I think it was strongly suggested. I mean, who runs the money in the state of Iowa? Because they had to pay a portion of that settlement.
The auditor.
And he said, hey, I won't sign off on this. I'm not going to vote yes for it unless Gary Barta has shown the door. So I think it was kind of, this is your fourth indiscretion that you've had that we've had to pay money out on.
Yeah.
So, hey, you've been here for 17 years. We're not going to announce it now. We're going to let you do it before the summer. You know, one of those. That's what I truly think.
Yeah.
I can't believe he's only 59 years old.
Who's going to replace him, do you think? Who's going to replace
him? I think it's that Beth Getz. You know, they said that she was brought in back in September.
Yeah, she's like
from Miami.
The assistant AD. Is that right?
But she was a sitting AD at Miami or at Ball State, and they brought her in.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's the Iowa woke. But supposedly she is qualified.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people are saying
she took over. She was at Minnesota for an interim year also, and she had to deal with all their issues that they had up there. So,
oh, yeah, with the Tracy
I think
Clay
she's qualified.
Stuff.
Yep, exactly. So I don't care who it is. I just want somebody that's going to embrace NIL or at least, you know, understand what it is, where Gary Barta was just like, no, nope, not going to do it.
Is at least wasn't going to get in the way of it, you know, that's,
exactly.
That's all we really ask. I mean, you know,
so you think,
Brad,
you think Barta was a problem with that?
Well, Brad Heinrichs from the Swarm Collective has said that, look, he's gotten along with Gary and everything, but Gary just hasn't really been one to really push and reach out. You know, they've asked for, you know, the season ticket list, you know, other stuff, subscriber list.
Yeah,
stuff,
the season ticket
and
list and the donor list.
Yeah, and they're not coming forth. Now, I get it, and Brad sort of does not smack about it, you know, but he sort of says, you know, in the sense that, yes, it has to appear arm's length. It cannot look like the university is doing this, but it seems like a lot of other schools are doing it and not facing penalties.
Yeah.
So why not do it, you know?
Well,
there's the thought
I think that was the one thing. That was the one thing that Gary Barta was really good at was fundraising. And
yeah,
if you
absolutely.
Took away an arm of that, and where that money could, you know, be shifted to the players, then his relevancy kind of goes out the window, you know, where he's not able to, you know, fundraise as much, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get it, you know, and he probably didn't like that. He's also had, you know, had a cancer issue last year or the year before. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that there could be reasons for it. So,
he had a good
know,
run.
Think,
what was it, 17 years or something like that?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and you when you look at what he, you know, his overall career, I mean, 17 years, that's the second longest behind Gene Smith. He served on the CFP committee for 3 years. He was chair of it for 2 years. But they've paid out over $10 million in lawsuits since 2017. And here's the thing. This is the next thing. This is the one I'm nervous about talking about because I don't know what's going on with it. But a lot of people think the gambling thing was the straw that broke the camel's back. So, Mike, what are you hearing on the gambling stuff?
I hear more stuff about Iowa State than I do about Iowa. They're keeping us really close to the vest. I mean, I listened to a podcast last week that was talking to Heller, the baseball coach, and they've been told to keep the players ready, keeping them suited because they could play at any minute. So I guess.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then Brad, you know, you were talking about Brad Heinrich. He comes on there and he talks about it doesn't sound like it's anybody major on the team for the football side of it. But the ones that could get it can anywhere from 3 to 6 game suspension. But it seems like you hear about Iowa State and Hunter Decker might be done because of this, and two or three other players could be suspended for six plus games that are starters. So I don't know. It's just weird that we're going into, what is it, 5 weeks, 6 weeks of this, and nothing's really come out.
Yeah.
Isn't it true that what they're being accused of was not illegal.
No,
yeah, I mean, other than
it's
an NCAA violation. But they were
legally
gambling.
Some of it might be illegal in terms of age. I think you still have to be 21, maybe 18 or whatever. But, you know, they said it might be underage stuff. The Department of Racing and Gaming or Gaming and Racing, whatever they call it, they said that they are not looking at compromise, you know, any Iowa or Iowa State games being compromised by it.
No, my understanding was it's mainly pro sports they were betting on, correct?
Right.
NFL, but, maybe some other sports.
And see, here's the thing.
When
if
it was
you
brought
bet
up
on,
about Iowa basketball, women's basketball, there were some questions about that during the tournament.
Right.
Hmm.
But, I mean, you know, betting to win against an underdog, you know, when your team's an underdog, I don't see how that's going to be a problem. So I don't think it's a matter of, you know, that what I don't understand with Hunter Deckers, he must have bet on college football or college sports, you know, because they say if you bet on, as an example, if you bet on horse racing, that's not considered a problem with the NCAA, even because the NCAA does not have horse racing as a sponsored sport, obviously. So, you know, that kind of thing, I think they've said if it's not an NCAA sanctioned or if the NCAA doesn't have a sanctioned sport for that, you know, then it's not an issue. Like curling, if you're betting on curling, I don't know that people bet on curling, but if you were,
sure they do
in
Canada.
But, One former Hawkeye who has moved on, but what I have heard, and again, mm-hmm. I'm not, supposedly he was at halftime telling his girlfriend to bet on stuff, and people say, yep. Well, look at some of his second half bonehead plays, you know, and that really makes you wonder, but I think that would be, like some people, you know, is that why he's gone? I don't know. And if he did, I mean, he's obviously not going to have a career at his new stop. So, you know, and if that's the case, maybe then who cares that he's gone anyway? You know, I don't know. But I hate that. I still won't say his name, on air, because I don't know that that's at all the case. I've just seen people talk
right.
about that. But I think it's pretty disingenuous to shout out his name without knowing that it's pretty slanderous.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? You know, to say that. So I don't know. Do you think, but is that something that, I mean, that would, Mike, Hawkeye Mike, you've worked in quote unquote the legal field. Is that a reason that you would get rid of an athletic director? Because it seems to me that's clearly something he doesn't control. Do you think that's part of it though or not?
I doubt it. I think, I think what Avin Mike was talking about with there are some issues in terms of the administration. I mean, I don't think appearing to be too deferential to Kirk Ferentz was, you know, a lot of people were upset about that. I don't think that's a reason. I think it was there's some administrative stuff on the financial end that came about as a result of several lawsuits through the years or discrimination with that. The university had to pay out big time, and the athletic director gets heat for that, and the auditor, like Avid Mike was saying, was pretty
right.
much, you know, you got Barta's got it's a big problem, and I think that probably, I don't know if he was forced out. It could just be that he was tired of some of the stuff, and he just was getting to the point after 17 years. And what is he in his mid 60s? He just decided to retire.
No, 59.
He's 59.
Oh, is that all?
Barta's
only 59.
He's younger than
surprised
by
that.
He's not
he's
younger
a
than Avid, Mike, but he's younger than the two of us. So,
kidding.
You remember, Hawkeye Mike, I don't remember if you – did you listen the day I had Felicia Goodson on? Okay, so, she said several times, it's clearly not just an Iowa problem. The racist stuff, as she put it, is not an Iowa problem. It's a college problem. You know, it's college-wide, nationwide. And she said several times, Kirk Ferentz is not a racist. You know, and she you can tell she loves Kirk Ferentz. She all but said, you know what, you know, having been around racism, I know what it is, and he's not a racist. She basically said that Tyler said Chris Doyle's not a racist. And Tyrone Tracy told me the same thing, by the way. But –
yeah,
you know, you said at the time though that you thought they should settle that lawsuit. I've never understood that. You thought they should settle because
it was more not a question of that they should that
yeah.
I thought they should. It's that I would be surprised if it didn't settle because there's usually every incentive to do that because discovery, which is what goes on
yeah.
if you're in a lead up to the trial, if you don't settle. Can be embarrassing and can be, you know, pretty intrusive type stuff and expensive. And then the plaintiffs themselves, you know, have an incentive to try to, you know, settle. And so I just was surprised. I think I said I would be surprised if it didn't settle, which it pretty much has now. And the question of whether they should, I would need to know more about what was actually what the accusations were and what the parties involved were saying, because my gut tells me that some of this stuff is pretty bush league and it was just a shakedown
yeah.
of the athletic
yeah.
department and maybe some resentment toward Chris Doyle, who could be tough. You know, just
yeah.
being tough is not being racist, but
yeah, right.
we're at that point in society where an African-American doesn't like the way he's being treated, it's automatically racism.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, both Felicia Goodson and Tyrone Tracy said that wasn't the case. But and Tyrone Tracy said if it happened, it happened well before I was ever there because I never saw any of that. you know, and speaking of a nice kid, you know, that's a kid that transferred out the right way, so to speak, and all that stuff. So, I mean, I cut him any kind of slack. But, I mean, I just, you know, and again, that's something that's not really under Gary Barta's control directly. I mean, if people had complained to him about it, then it's a different animal. But don't forget, if you look through the stuff, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of the plaintiffs, a lot of it was retracted, but sort of like, well, okay, it didn't happen exactly like that. In depositions, they were kind of walking stuff back. So that's why I wondered about the settlement. But again, that's,
well,
you know, they go for Gary Barta.
Well, if you remember, like, one of the plaintiffs was Akram Wadley. And if you remember, a great
talent. He still wanted
great
his brother
player
to go there recently.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but also, if you remember when he was playing at Iowa, there was tension between him and the coaching staff, and Ferentz, I think, included, just over, you know, there was problems a little bit with Wadley, you know, complained about things. And so there was a little bit of, I think, just a residual, this example, you know, you could also, if I don't know if he was one of the defendants that was Johnson Koulianos, but he was not. Okay. But with Wadley,
Johnson Koulianos,
it's a history there of a tension between, you know,
DJK
having nothing
is
to do
actually,
with race, I think.
DJK has actually has made somewhat of a turn and said, look, this was immaturity on my part and all that kind of stuff. He has said that a lot, you know. So, you know, I just can't imagine that. I mean, some of the stuff, you know, that the gambling thing, again, that's not, you know. But, again, the buck stops here at a certain point. I mean, if coaches are messing up and the AD is not doing anything about it, then, you know, it becomes, you know, incumbent on him to say, you know, this has got to stop. But, I mean, I don't know. It's just to me it seems like that part of it is, you know. Now, on to the gambling thing, you know, Avid Mike, you said you've heard more Iowa State, and Hawkeye Mike, your brother is an Iowa State fan, so, you know.
Right.
But why do you think we're not – why are we hearing some of the stuff on Iowa State and Iowa somehow keeping it so close to the vest? Do you think it's because Iowa just doesn't have that much exposure or Avid Mike?
That's what I'm hoping.
But we have – We have 26 players involved. They only have 16, but I think they have higher profile players other than the baseball team for us. I mean, our best player on our baseball team is part of it. So,
yeah.
Right. I think there's a lot of sports involved on the Iowa end, too. It might just be a handful of football players.
It's football, basketball, baseball. I think they said track and field, which, again, there are some track and field guys that suddenly haven't been participating. I think, though, some of that might be due to injury, but, you know, that's kind of it makes you wonder. I mean, what's the guy from Virginia Tech? He'd been on the NFL, and he lost, what, 6 games? He lost half a season?
Yeah, they I think it was originally 10, then they reduced it to 6, and I think they reduced it to 3. It was reduced twice.
Oh, it was, okay.
Yeah.
And also it could be some players on the football team that left, you know, like, I mean, we don't know that you know,
like
it's from last year and they're not on the team anymore.
And
you wonder if maybe that contributed to why they went pro. I don't want to throw any names out because I don't have any names to throw out. I don't know, but I'm just, you wonder about it.
But again, you know, I won't bring up ours because it hasn't been, you know, the one I was talking about, a transfer. But yet, you know, you're hearing Hunter Decker's name used. I mean, that to me is just...
Yeah, I have heard that.
How has Iowa State allowed that to happen? You know?
Well,
I mean, that's what
I think that's a lot of insider information that's come. I haven't seen it, like, publicized.
And people
it's
will say stuff
the
on the internet. People will say they don't know anything, and they'll say it on the internet. You know? I mean, everything's out there now.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't necessarily – I mean, a lot of this is still rumor and sort of innuendo. I really want to see something a little more concrete myself, but I'm a little nervous about it. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't.
True. Well, me too.
I mean, especially if we lose them late in the game, you know, we kind of need to know. And maybe that's when we'll know. Maybe, you know, they come for summer camp in August and, you know, suddenly 6 guys are no longer there. You know, that's how we would know, I would guess. I mean, but again, can they practice?
I just hope it's not Mickey Mouse stuff, you know, that the NCAA is going off
on. My worry is this just keeps lingering and lingering and lingering. And, you know, I would love this to be done and over with by the Big Ten, you know, press day, which is the end of July. You know, let's give it another month and then, or 2 months almost, you know, and then be done with it. But I just, it can't be just monkeyed around with and nothing comes out and not getting any resolution to it for 6 months. And I have a feeling that's what it's going to be.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, the Big Ten, you know, at the same time, the Big 10K is run at that time. I think there's also a 5K. Either of you guys thinking of running in that?
That'd be a long trek for me to Chicago.
Yeah.
You can do it virtually, can't you?
You can do it virtually. But yeah, Jerry DiNardo ran it 1 year, I know. Jerry DiNardo and Griffith, Howard Griffith ran in it 1 year. I thought it was kind of, you know, Big Ten Press Day is when it might hit the, you know, rubber would have to hit the road. I mean, you know, I think we would hear if it was any major guys, but still, it just makes me wonder, you know, how bad it could be, you know. So, you know, by the way, are you guys jealous now that Caitlin Clark's net worth is like estimated a million and a half to $3 million or whatever?
You know what? I'm not nervous. I'm not jealous at all. I think she deserves every penny she can get. I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I have that much respect for her. Yeah.
But how about this, the fact that LSU is bringing in these players in the transfer portal? Several of them have joined LSU in the transfer portal. It makes you wonder, do they not want to play with
Caitlin
Clark?
Yeah, I wonder what's going on there.
You know, do they want to play with her, or do they just want to?
Maybe it's their head coach's fashion sense. You know, has something to do with
it.
Yeah. Talking about the feathers
of
the golden man.
She's like you know, I don't know. There's something about her that since they brought her in, that's, I don't know. Maybe I'm just
there's
maybe
a
I'm
whole other topic
a little
about
bit
her.
But so,
I got one question for you guys, and it goes back to the AD situation. The big elephant in the room for the new AD is, do you keep that contract stipulation for Brian, or do you rip that up?
The
25
points
and 7 wins.
I think you keep it unless I think you have some out. As an example, if three offensive players were part of this whole gambling thing, do you rip it up? I mean, you know, there's so many variables to it.
It's such a stigma with the media. People, it's almost become laughing stock that we have our offensive coordinator. Just fire him or just let him see what he can do with good players, you know?
Let me ask you guys this. If it's the assistant AD that becomes the AD, she was probably a little bit involved with Barta, don't you think, on the whole stipulation? So I would think that she would
really
be more likely
really
to adhere to it.
Yeah, because
was,
she was
I don't
also,
know. I'm just I'm
she
just,
wasn't
I'm just
associate
yeah.
AD. She wasn't just associate AD. She was COO of the athletic department, chief operating officer.
Right.
So I think she has to know what that's going on. I mean, I think Barta was Brian's direct superior, and I assume that if she's the new AD, she would be. But I think that contract is meaningless in a way, because if they score 24 points a game and go 12-0, I don't think anybody cares. Yeah, they're not going to fire him. I don't think anybody cares. You know, on the other hand, if they score 28 points a game, but they go, 5-7, he still could be out of a job, because his dad might be.
He hasn't hit both of the –
if they score 28 points a game and they're 5-7, the problem is not the offense.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
let's talk about for a second. The defense. It sounds like some guys are looking really good on the defensive line, and we got that that linebacker transfer from Virginia. I'm still harkening back to two transfers that we had out. One of them, Justin Jacobs. There was an article on him recently. Did anybody see it?
No.
Everything
out for him.
He said. Oregon had always been his dream school.
Then why did you go to Iowa?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I didn't get that. I think it was clearly, a puff piece. But the other is there's, the speculation about one of our players that did transfer, Keegan Johnson. There are people now that say, because there was an article about him, how he's running full speed, how he's not getting, they're running more plays.
Yeah.
It's like, Yeah, this miraculous recovery. Does anybody think he sandbagged that whole last season so he wouldn't lose a year?
I do think maybe there was
100%.
Something there.
100%.
He
made a decision that he didn't want to be.
Yeah.
Well, he made his decision he didn't want to be at Iowa too late. He made it in August, and he couldn't transfer any place at that time. So he basically said he had a soft tissue issue the whole season. We had this conversation watching games. So 100%.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
I
think it's good riddance almost with that guy. I think it's almost good riddance, especially now that we've got this guy coming in from Ohio State, Reganey's back. I think we're going to be all right, and obviously McNamara. You know, if we could just get a little bit more consistency in the offensive line, I think the offense will be
100%.
vastly improved this year.
And they
this
only
not
have to
be
a middle of the road.
This will not be last year's Iowa team.
Yeah.
No. And it only has to be a middle-of-the-road offense for us to be successful, because the defense, we know Parker will always come up with something. Even if he has not all the pieces, he knows how to scheme to keep the us in game. So.
Yeah, I mean, even the Ohio State game, people talk about, that was lopsided, they hung 54 on us. In reality, we were in
that game.
Yeah, we were in that game into the third quarter, basically. Before it just finally became a joke. So, I'm just shocked by the Keegan Johnson thing more than I am. Jacobs, several people said that just looks so much like tampering the way it happened. But Keegan Johnson, I guess I'm kind of surprised he didn't end up at Nebraska, because that's where his father went. But some people said, once Mickey Joseph was out of consideration, that's why he didn't go there. So,
But I was also surprised by that Terry, the defensive back, Terry, the guy, he didn't play much
Terry
last
Roberts.
Year either. He's hurt a lot.
Terry Roberts.
I was kind of surprised about him going into the portal too. But maybe they're too loaded at defensive back, and he thought he wasn't going to play much.
He was a special guy for the most part. So.
We all knew Jamari Harris was going to come back this year. Cooper DeJean is a first-round draft pick. Plus, we had a lot of young guys.
Nwankwo is going to be a great player for him. Look at what he did in the bowl game.
No doubt. I think that's, no doubt about it. So that's kind of – okay. Well, guys, we're coming up to the end of it, so I'm going to sign you off, and then I'll finish up, and then let's keep in touch, because we're coming up it's the June 1st.
It'll be here before you know it, right?
Yeah, June 1st is when I start getting psyched for Big Ten football again. So that's tomorrow. So,
I'm texting you all the time, so I'm always up for a conversation.
I think on this gambling thing, I think part of it, Avid Mike, you said you want it to be over and quick and all that stuff. Part of me doesn't want to know. You know what I mean? I'm afraid what we're going to find out.
I'm with you.
And that's partly the whole silence thing. Sometimes silence ain't a good thing, and I think this might be one of those times. So let's hope. In the meantime, guys, thanks for being on, and I will talk to you guys later.
Sounds good, sir. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Okay, so that's it. That's the two Mikes, Avid Mike and Hawkeye Mike, our sports segment for tonight. I'm going to do a hankering tomorrow. I'm going to do it at 2 p.m. Eastern time. I'm going to talk about the debt ceiling deal, and I'm going to talk more about the bank stuff, because I just haven't really dug in enough about the bank stuff, and it's really – the more I think about it, the more it's really hacking me off. I mean, First Republic, that whole bailout by the other banks, and then, boom, all of a sudden they are taking over anyway. The Fed sees them no matter what. I mean – that just doesn't sound right. The whole thing just sounds wrong. Something about it is wrong. Got a final internet laughy from the Babylon Bee. This one's really good. Whatever Alejandro Mayorkas, the DHS head. So the Babylon Bee has a mock headline. Mayorkas heads to border to fire starter pistol when Title 42 expires. I know it's not actually funny, especially if you live in a border state or a state that has a lot of illegals, but it's so true. It's so typical that's how, they're literally, and it dovetails with the earlier internet laughy of, you know, justice or Biden administration says immigration, illegal immigration down 90% since they redefined it. I mean, it just typifies it. So, hey, like I've said before, and I'll keep saying it now, it's up to us. If we're sitting around waiting for help, Holter made a good point on a tweet when somebody was talking about McCarthy and, you know, the debt deal. Holter made a good point. What about the 190 other Republicans that are slated to vote for it? I mean, why aren't they off the hook? Why are we letting our representatives get away with this? Last thought on the whole Trump DeSantis thing. Look, I don't care which one you go with. They're both great candidates. I believe that. Have the one you like. But what we can't have is the infighting that we're seeing all over the internet. Not from the candidates. They're going to do what they're going to do. But, I mean, infighting of people that are just really getting after each other. This is what the left wants. This is what the left wants. I'll tell you, and I'm not the first person to say this, but I think it's fact. It's an easy way for the left to cheat. Look, I think both Biden and both DeSantis and Trump would beat Biden. I don't think there's any doubt about that in a legit election. But the more infighting there is, and the more the more split that happens, the left's going to be able to use that as a cheating mechanism and say, well, no, it's perfectly understandable. They split the party. So I think we don't want that. We want the best candidate. And pick your one in the primary. There's no reason to snipe at the other candidates other than Chris Christie. I don't even know why he's running, but whatever. But don't. This infighting is not helping us. Whether you like Trump or DeSantis, and I like that, I like them both. Vito and I were talking, you know, it's possible that they could end up, I mean, if Trump is the nominee, he could end up picking DeSantis as his running mate, and that would be an unbeatable ticket. So think about that before you get out there and snipe. Another thing that Tsunami says, she's one of a friend on Twitter, don't just take piece by piece. I mean, when you sit there and say, oh, well, DeSantis is supported by Bush. Well, you know what? Jeb Bush is the former governor of the state. Of course he's going to support DeSantis. Jeb Bush was a good governor of the state. He was a terrible presidential candidate, but he was a good governor. So it's natural he'd support DeSantis. And somebody else pointed out, don't just get on Trump don't lionize Trump. Let's not forget, Trump at one point supported Romney's election to the Utah Senate race. So, you know, there's pluses and minuses all along with every candidate. So don't snipe over it and don't get into the fighting between, because what we need to do is unify conservative candidates. That's what we need. And I think both candidates are infinitely better than Joe Biden. Again, I want to thank Sue from New Mexico for being here. Both mics. T. Bodie was in for a bit. My sister, Duck Northwest Media, in the chat room. In the meantime, folks, if you're back tomorrow at 2 o'clock for Hankerings, I would welcome it. Or I will be back next week at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a good one, folks. Good night.